And welcome back to the American Revolution Podcast, Episode 41, The Invasion Begins. So we've talked about it. We kind of glossed over it last week. New York was known as a stronghold of Tory sentiment. Manhattan, Long Island, even the lower part of the main state were definitely areas where they had a high Tory population. We've even talked about in the several episodes pertaining to things like the Declaration of Independence and the Continental Congresses, that New York was always in the middle, always on the fence. So it's not a surprise that Tories living in Manhattan City are living in fear during Continental occupation. Washington even issues orders that any Tory that was caught helping the British would suffer consequences. Now, I'm not saying that Washington was ruling with an iron fist, but if you were caught helping the British by, say, smuggling things for them or giving them support monetarily or with supplies, I would figure that the Patriots would come in, probably seize those assets, and you'd probably spend some time in the city's new jail, Bridewell Prison. Now, there is one instance where the Tories help the British, or at least attempt to, where it has definite repercussions. You see, there is an assassination attempt on George Washington. Not a lot of people know about it. What even more people don't know is where the plot is exposed. It's actually exposed in one of the most unlikely of places, Bridewell Prison. You see, Isaac Ketchum was a prisoner in the city jail. He learns from his cellmate, who's bragging about the fact, that he's part of a plot to assassinate Washington. Now, I'm sure that Ketchum had no overwhelming loyalty to Washington or the Continentals, but let's face it, if you get that kind of juicy bit of info, you're definitely going to want to tell someone. It might help your case with getting out of prison. So he tells the guards of the situation and wants to ensure that the general staff will be made aware, which they are, and Washington is protected. Now, upon investigation of the case, a lot of people thought that William Tryon, the former New York governor, and David Matthews, the city's Tory mayor, were somehow the ringleaders, or at least key members of the plot to assassinate Washington. Problem was, they had no proof. So thus, nothing that the Continentals could do. One man, though, will not escape justice. That's Lifeguard Sergeant Thomas Hickey. Now, what the heck is a lifeguard? Well, a lifeguard wasn't watching a pool. He was actually the personal protector of George Washington. Washington had lifeguards, men that were outside his tent, with him, anywhere in his general vicinity, 24 hours a day. I mean, the only person that spends more time with Washington is Billy Lee, his personal slave and valet. So you can see how it could be quite the scandal that his own lifeguard would be a part of a plot to assassinate him. On June 28th, in front of a crowd of around 20,000 people, Sergeant Hickey is led to the gallows. On June 25th, the first dozen British ships would arrive off New York, including General Howe's flagship, the Greyhound. Now, General Howe made no attempt to land his troops. He was going to wait until the rest of the fleet arrived. In England, about a month earlier, Admiral Richard Howe, General Howe's older brother, was given command of the North American fleet. Now, this is a great honor, I'm sure, but it's definitely a tall order. Admiral Howe had 75 ships to blockade Patriot ports, combat any kind of Patriot naval threat, while safeguarding all British-held ports along the whole East Coast, from Nova Scotia down to Florida. Richard Howe left England with a fleet of about 130 ships. He arrives off Halifax on June 23rd. His brother was already underway. He led the fleet to rendezvous with his brother in New York Harbor. Figuring it would take about 6 days, he should arrive by June 30th. But as British luck has had it up to this point, they hit bad winds, and they're also held up because the navigator mistook Nantucket Island for Long Island. With these delays mounting, Richard Howe sent the entire fleet ahead. He was staying in the area because he wanted to exercise some sort of peace. I've mentioned that the Howe brothers have had a history with the colonies. I've also mentioned that they were not without sympathy. So Admiral Howe, as he passed Port Towns, was offering to anyone the chance to take an oath of allegiance and act as a friendly port for the British. They would be protected and pardoned of anything having to do with the rebellion. Now, if they could get the rebels to capitulate without a major conflict, that would be the best. But you know, we all know that the Patriots were pretty well set that they're going to go toe-to-toe with the British. But the Howes, nonetheless, really want to exercise these peace agreements. With enough of the fleet gathered, at 10 a.m. on July 2nd, Howe ordered the landing of troops on Staten Island. As transports arrived piecemeal, they would also be landed. Howe was beginning to consolidate his forces on Staten Island to prepare for the overall invasion of New York. Terror ran through the city on July 12th when the HMS Phoenix and the HMS Rose sailed up the Hudson River and began shelling portions of the city. This was definitely a gutsy move. Now, if the winds did not work in their favor, they would be stuck between two defenses on either side of the Hudson River that could definitely have damaged the ships, if not destroyed them. But the winds were in their favor, and the mouth of the Hudson was too wide for the batteries that they couldn't stop the ships altogether. Later that night, Admiral Howe arrived with the HMS Eagle. Finally, the Howe brothers were joined for the invasion of New York. On August 1st, Parker's battered fleet arrived from the south. His 9 warships and 35 transports carrying Clinton's 3,000 men and his second-in-command, Lorne Cornwallis, were landed on Staten Island. A couple of days later, after 22 more ships arrived from England and Scotland, General had enough troops to start the invasion. But he still held off. He wanted to wait for a convoy carrying his men's camp supplies to arrive. See, he didn't want to be stuck in the middle of unfriendly territory without his men's ability to make camp, food, and most importantly, their fresh supply of canteens. Canteens in a summer campaign were, of course, very important. On August 12th, Commodore William Hotham's fleet of 100 ships, which included 85 transports, had arrived. He brought Howe his much-needed camp supplies and even more troops, 1,000 British Guards, along with our first wave of Hessians, 7,800 under General Philip von Heister. A Hessian lieutenant would write of Staten Island, a hilly country covered with beautiful forests composed mostly of a kind of fir tree, the odor of which can be inhaled at a distance of 2 miles from land. Peaches, chestnuts, apples, pears, grapes, and various kinds of nuts grow everywhere in wild profusion, mingled with roses and blackberry bushes. The climate and soil are without exception, loveliest, healthiest, most agreeable on the face of the globe. Now, that is definitely a look back at what New York was like years before it was built up and industrialized. Because I drive through Staten Island now, and I smell no pine trees, and there are no more orchards growing everywhere. So I will say that this look back is definitely strange for a homegrown New Yorker to visualize Staten Island that way. And there was definitely similar reactions by all who arrived. For some, I'm sure they were just to be happy to be off the ship. Another group of soldiers that were padding the British ranks were fugitive slaves. They were promised their freedom if they fought for the crown. Included in this group were 100 men, remnants of Dunmore's Ethiopian regiment. Now, Lord Dunmore is a man that we've talked little about, if at all. He was royal governor of New York in 1771, but a drinking problem saw him removed from office, and then immediately installed as the royal governor of Virginia. Don't ask me how that works. He's definitely a major player in the pre-war South. Even gets into a war with frontier Indians and has a war named after him, Dunmore's War. Before the war, he also does battle with Patrick Henry, the fiery orator from Virginia. They battle constantly in the political arena. it's a good estimate that he's not well-liked. He's actually sent running from the governor's mansion in Williamsburg in April 1775 by the Patriots because he tried seizing the capital's powder supplies. He will escape to a British vessel on the James River. From there, he's going to work to disrupt Patriot operations in the area. And one of these such instances is when he tries to organize the slaves into a regiment. He calls all slaves in the area to join with the British and forms them into the Ethiopian Regiment. Hundreds of slaves will flock to the British, hoping to be free. The men that arrive off New York in August are a fraction of what started. A string of military defeats and a smallpox outbreak really thin the ranks. So Howe's force, by the numbers, he landed 24,000 men on Staten Island. They arrived on around 400 transports, about 30 warships were protecting them, and on these ships were some 10,000 sailors. The sheer size of this force must have been awesome to the Continentals. General Howe had his army consolidated on Staten Island, and he began planning the invasion. Of course, there are always those that when you make a plan, oppose the plan. In this case, Henry Clinton and William Tryon believe that if they concentrate on a single landing zone, they're really limiting themselves. The Phoenix and the Rose proved that the defenses on the Hudson could be run. If they sailed some of the army to the north end of Manhattan, they would be able to put a tight grip on the Continentals and limiting their escape options. Howe felt that landing on Long Island gave him a good supply base. Long Island had orchards, wheat, cornfields. They also had a high Tory population, giving him good support with the local population. If Howe splits his force, he's very reliant on his supply lines that stretch all the way back to England. But if he can secure himself on Long Island, Long Island can provide a lot of what he needs. Howe was definitely becoming more of a cautious commander. He is less focused on ending the war with one grand battle. Instead, he fought a tactical war. Howe was capturing territory, waterways, cities. These were the tactics of Europe, and something he wasn't known for. Howe was known for using unconventional tactics from all his years in the colonies. That's why Parliament chose him as commander in the first place. But now the Howe brothers are courting peace. What was the change? Many historians believe that the bloodletting at Bunker Hill was the defining moment, quote-unquote, for General Howe. Now, if you couple that with the pounding that the British took in South Carolina, or the lopsided victories the Patriots won at Moore's Bridge in North Carolina, my thought is that these surprisingly early victories by the Patriots and Howe's overestimation of Washington's force were all contributing factors to this new conservative approach. While the Howe brothers spent summers waiting for reinforcements, Washington's army was continuing to shore up their defenses. They know the British are coming. They know where they're landing. At the north end of Manhattan, they began work on a future Fort Washington. Started in June, it was placed on the highest point at that end of the island to cover Kingsbridge and Freebridge. After the incident with the Phoenix and the Rose, Washington also ordered another fort. The Fort Lee was built on the opposite side of the Hudson to cover the river in case the British were going to try that again. Back on Long Island, it became clear that the line of forts and redoubts were inadequate, because the space between them left them vulnerable to individual attack. Nathaniel Greene set 4,000 men to work building more forts and redoubts and then connecting them with trenches to close in the American lines. Now, unless you have a map in front of you, I'm sure it's very difficult to visualize. So the whole defenses are laid out on Brooklyn Heights and what's in front of Brooklyn Heights. They're located on a peninsula, and a peninsula is a good place to lay your defenses. You're covered on water from three sides. You only have one land access that you have to worry about. Now, Greene ran his new defenses on that line between Wallabout Bay and Gowanus Bay. From there, they continued to the west to Red Hook to protect against that area from getting a landing zone as well. They also put a battery on Red Hook to cover Governor's Island as well. So this is it. The guns are placed. The lines are drawn. The Battle of Brooklyn is about to begin. So that's it for this week's episode. Next week, and I'm hoping I get us there because the Battle of Brooklyn has proved to be one of the more expansive topics that I'm going to be talking about so far. I'm trying to decide whether I want to cut the battle into two bits or to have one long episode. So I'm trying to gauge this weekend how much I can get done. Remember, I am a teacher, so it's very difficult to find time between my busy schedule of teaching the future of our country. So I'm definitely going to put out an episode this week. I'm hoping that I can cover the entire battle, but it might be one of those cliffhangers to be continued episodes where we get ourselves started and I have to cut it short because I've just run out of time. So till next week, I hope everyone has a great week. Remember, keep using the Facebook for those questions. I hope I will be able to post a couple of new book recommendations up. And once again, please, I've been getting great messages from people on Facebook, and the support is always a big boost to me. But remember, iTunes is still there. If you go in and give me a 5-star rating on iTunes, it actually helps me boost my viewership. And so more and more people will hear about the podcast, and thus the message will permeate through the intraweb. So once again, thank you to all those that listen religiously every week. It is appreciated, and I'm super happy to have your support. Just remember, if you can, 5-star rating. Please, thank you. Till next week, as always, keep that powder dry.